When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When I wake up, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk.
Oklahoma is just hours away from kicking off game number two of the 2023 college football season. The Sooners hosting the SMU Mustangs. Both teams coming into this game with an equal 1-0 record. Oklahoma 14.5 point favorite. Over and under has been set at 68.5. If you ended this time a thing, the ESPN matchup predictor has Oklahoma with an 89.9% chance of winning the game. What's up, everybody? This is Matt and the Sooner Nation podcast. A day late for those of you who regularly listen, download, subscribe to the podcast. A day late on this game preview, but life has taken me across the pond over in London for this week. And that means like Saturday night, the game kicks off at 11 p.m. for me. So, I mean, look, that's you got to wait another day for the podcast, but then I got to wait all day Saturday till 11 p.m. to watch the game. But that's the life we live. Hey, we're going to do a short preview of this game. We'll talk about four things to watch for in Oklahoma's game against SMU and then some key players along with a prediction at the end. Oklahoma with a fascinating start to the season, 73-0 over Arkansas State. But it was Arkansas State, and there's not really a lot that we learned from this team other than I think you can confidently say they're a lot more organized and they're a lot deeper and they're a lot faster. Those are really the three things, the three main takeaways I believe that you can get from that season opener. SMU is going to bring in an offense that's definitely going to, I believe, challenge this defense way more than Arkansas State was able to do. And also on the flip side of the ball, I think the SMU defense, which I don't believe is fantastic, but I do believe that they're going to give up a little bit more of a challenge to Oklahoma. The Sooners 642 yards of total offense last week. Now, SMU is not coming off of a great opponent either. They played Louisiana Tech to open up their season, and they won 38-14, gave up 269 yards of total offense to Louisiana Tech. And now the question is, it's really kind of the same question you have with Oklahoma. Was Oklahoma's offense really that good to merit 642 yards, or was it a combination of the speed of play, the increase in team speed, the year of experience, and this offense taking another step from year one to year two of Jeff Lebby, and then you combine that to just the pitiful, pitiful performance that Arkansas State had on defense. That could be playing in a little bit more with Louisiana Tech, their defense, their offense versus this SMU defense. But regardless, I think both sides of the ball, Oklahoma absolutely is going to get a stronger test than what they did in week one. Another interesting note about this game, it's the first of two consecutive games for the Sooners against American Athletic Conference opponents. Oklahoma obviously playing SMU at home on Saturday and then traveling next weekend to Tulsa to play the Golden Hurricane. So let's break this down. What are some things that we want to watch for in this game? I believe there's four things that I'm going to be looking for when this game comes on. The first thing is, sticking with this defensive theme, is can they get pressure on the quarterback? If you're going to look for one thing to complain about Oklahoma's defense in their performance against Arkansas State, it was the lack of pressure on the quarterback. Now, Brent Venables was able to explain that away. I think Gamefield backed up what he said by really looking at two different things. The first thing was this. Oklahoma didn't stunt and they didn't blitz in that game. The second thing is that Arkansas State was in max protection on their deep quarterback drop. So Arkansas State was either getting the ball out of the quarterback's hand really, really fast, or they were in max protection on deep drops. That's why you had to wait till Ethan Downs in garbage time to get Oklahoma sack on Saturday. That's not going to be the case. I don't believe that's the case this Saturday, because you've got a quarterback in Preston Stone for SMU who completed 62.2% of his passes last Saturday, threw for 248 yards, and he tossed three touchdown passes. Now, they're balanced. This is a balanced offensive attack against Louisiana Tech. SMU managed 38 passing plays to 42 running plays. Now, again, that's pretty close to balance. I believe the reason you tend more heavily on the running here is because SMU's offense sets up a little bit like what Oklahoma was really doing with Lincoln Riley. We're kind of figuring out what they're going to do with Jeff Lebby, but I think it's going to be more of the same, where you use the run to set up the pass. Now, the thing about it is SMU also was working with a lead, so obviously you run more clock by running more plays. When you look at SMU's four touchdowns of the day last week against Louisiana Tech, the first three of those came through the air, and they averaged in length just under 34 yards, average touchdown pass. Meaning this, SMU is going to try to go deep, which means Preston Wilson is going to have time in the pocket, which means there's going to be opportunity for Oklahoma's defense to crash in. And I don't know that he's a strong runner where you got to kind of like protect the edge. You definitely want to keep him in the pocket, but I don't think you got to worry about Preston Stone just jumping out there and running 30, 35 yards down the field like some other quarterbacks Oklahoma will face this season will have the propensity to do. You keep him in the pocket, you bring pressure up the middle, either through stunting or blitzing, and you got to get pressure on him. And that's just something that has to happen. Can they do that? You can explain it away from in week one when you're playing an inferior Arkansas State team. When you go, you step up to SMU, you know, this time next year, the Mustangs can tout the fact that they're going to be in the ACC. Still not the case here. They're American Conference, but still, you put SMU against that Arkansas State team. I don't know that they win 73-0, but they still clean up on Butch Jones and company. It's a larger step up in competition for Oklahoma this week than what we saw last week. So can the defense get the pressure? Because if you can't get it this week, then you've got a problem. I don't believe you can identify a problem after week one. I accept the explanation. I think people who are rationally minded accept the explanation. But you don't get quarterback pressure in week two against a guy who's going to drop back and throw it 35 to 45 times a game. You're going to be in trouble here. You got to get the pressure on. The second thing I want to know, I'm going to be looking for on Saturday with this Oklahoma offense now, flipping sides of the ball. How deep will the running back rotation go? I don't know about you. I mean, I really don't know about you. But I was super surprised that it was Tawee Walker, however you guys, I mean, some people say it some way, some people say the other, but I was super surprised. He was number one. He was the first guy in the game, first guy to get a carry, you know, for that. If you want to go top tier running backs, and you have to forgive me if you're a Dylan Smothers or a Caleb Hicks fan, because those are true freshmen, definitely not top tier guys just yet. But if you're talking about the guys at the top of this depth chart, it was Walker, Major, and Barnes in that order getting into this game. Now you're going to throw in a Gavin Salchuk guy who's probably going to be still not 100%, but good enough to be able to play in this game. What does that do with this running back rotation? It's interesting to note, and this will come back around whenever we talk about our players to watch. It's interesting to note that Javonte Barnes, he was the last guy to come in of that upper tier running back room. He was the last guy to get on the field, but he led the team in carry rushing attempts with 13 attempts, 49 yards. Now you throw Salchuk in there. So the question is this the week? Is this the weekend where you begin to see that running back rotation transition towards these younger guys, towards Barnes and Salchuk? Or are they going to stick with, hey, man, you know, Marcus Major and Tawee Walker, these guys have earned their stripes. They've earned the right to be up there, the first guys on the field. I think you're going to get into the point of play where you don't want the guys who have earned the right to be the first guys on the field. You want the guys who have the biggest bang for the buck to be the first guys on the field. And so I wouldn't be shocked if there's a little bit difference in that rotation. Remember last week, Walker, Major, Barnes. What if Barnes is the second or the first guy, and where do you put Salchuk in there? I think Salchuk probably is going to be worked in much the same manner of Barnes, you know, kind of get the flow of the game going. You know, the opening series is Walker. The second series is Major. Third series was Salchuk. I can see that going like Barnes, Major, Salchuk. Excuse me. Third series last week was Barnes. This week, I can see that third series being Salchuk. So I want to know, how deep did this running back rotation go? Because I don't think it's going to be 73-0. I don't think you can reach down all the way to the freshman this week. I'm expecting this to be a competitive game. And you can hate me for that if you want to. I hate myself for it. But the reality is, I've got to see this defense really defend against a true offense that is balanced and has the ability to go deep. And that's what the Mustangs bring to the table. So I'm expecting it to be a competitive game. Speaking of going deep, here's the third thing I'm wanting to watch for, is how do the Mustangs defend Oklahoma receiver Andrell Anthony? The Michigan transfer was spectacular last week. He set the tone on the opening drive, 45-yard bomb from Dylan Gabriel. And then basically after that, Arkansas State felt that it would be better for them to accept a 15-yard pass interference penalty as opposed to letting him continue to catch those downfield bombs. How do they defend him? I don't see. I mean, they may try to say, look, we got better horses than what Arkansas State did. They may try to go one-on-one. I don't think you can defend. I don't think there's a guy in the American Conference who can defend Andrell Anthony one-on-one. I'm not basing that just on what I saw on Saturday against Arkansas State. I think you go back to his Big Ten days in the 2 years at Michigan, and you can see Big Ten guys struggle to defend him one-on-one. I believe if SMU tries to do this, it's a huge mistake. And I think this is where you look at one of Oklahoma's very first advantages in this game is you got to, I believe, if you're SMU, you have to play over the top. You have to rotate a safety over the top of Andrell Anthony to keep him from beating you deep. Now, what that's going to do, what it should do, is it open up things mid-range and across the middle. A guy like Jahlil Farouk or maybe something from the tight end position. Austin Stogner was not involved in the passing game last week. Is this the week where Austin Stogner actually gets in there, not just to block, but to catch passes, particularly in the red zone? Once Oklahoma gets 25, I know technically the red zone is 20 in. I think for Jeff Lebby's group, the red zone starts around the 25. What do you do with a guy like Austin Stogner if you're running a safety deep, if the defense is running the safety deep over a guy like Andrell Anthony? Again, Jacques Bedaway, those guys. Number one, how are they defending? And then number two, how does Jeff Lebby and company take advantage of that? Because you have an advantage either way. You try to defend Anthony one-on-one, you have the advantage of having the fastest guy on the field. You try to defend Anthony by putting a safety over the top, you have the advantage of creating a mismatch between a guy like Austin Stogner and a linebacker, or even Austin Stogner against a smaller defensive back. You have those type of mismatches that Dylan Gabriel and Jeff Lebby are going to have to identify and then take advantage of, because this is the type of game where not only can you do that, but you absolutely need to do that. Look for some shots early on down the field with Andrell Anthony. Look for those shots, much like what we saw with Arkansas State, to set the tone to get SMU to try to switch into whatever defense that they really, really plan to run against this guy and moving on. So just to go back, can Oklahoma's defense get to the quarterback? How deep will Oklahoma go in the running back rotation? How does SMU defend against Andrell Anthony? And then here's the last thing, and then we're going to switch over to Oklahoma defense for this. Can Oklahoma's defense stand tall on fourth down? Oklahoma, like I said earlier, it's hard. It's really hard to criticize what this defense did in week one. Honestly, I think even going after the lack of a pass rush is pretty much nitpicking to do that. But now it won't be the case after week two, because SMU, they're light years offensively. They are light years ahead of where Arkansas State is. And that's going to present a challenge to Oklahoma's defense. And even if you get them behind the chains, you get that pressure in there, you make a tackle for a loss, you get a quarterback sack, that doesn't mean you're out of the woods yet with this SMU offense, because the Mustangs were 3 of 4. They went for it. They had 4 fourth down attempts where they went for it last week against Louisiana Tech, converted 75% of the time, and you'd be foolish. You'd be foolish to think that these guys aren't going to have that same mindset coming into Norman. SMU has nothing to lose in this game. They're a 15.5 point underdog. They're playing a team that they're not supposed to beat on the road. So, of course, absolutely, they're going to go for it on fourth down. And so you're going to see, I believe, Oklahoma's defense challenged in many, many facets of the game that they weren't challenged in a week ago. And one of those is going to be fourth and medium. I mean, if you're fourth and five and are under, I think SMU, based on where they are field position, I think especially 100%, I believe this, if they're in plus territory, SMU is going to be going for it on fourth downs. Four attempts against against Louisiana Tech. I expect at least that many against this Oklahoma defense to see if they can find success. The way you shut that down, shut down them attempting to go for it on fourth down, is you got to lock them up. You got to make them go 0 for 1 on fourth down, 0 for 2 on fourth down. I think once you get to 0 for 3 on fourth down, you start thinking, yeah, this isn't working. But you give them success early on fourth down, they're going to keep building that confidence and keep trying to do it and go for it. So they're balanced on how they run their offense. They're balanced on how they go for it on fourth down. They did four attempts, like we already talked about last week against Louisiana Tech. Two of those were rushing. Two of them were passing. Now, it's worth noting the one that didn't convert, they converted on three of the four. The one that didn't convert was a running play. And I do believe you're looking at, again, we talked about mismatches, right? I said Andrew L. Anthony, one of the early mismatches Oklahoma has in this game. I think the other side of the ball, one of the mismatches that Oklahoma is going to have against SMU will be the Oklahoma's defensive line against SMU's offensive line. I think when you look at the starters that Oklahoma ran out there, these guys aren't, they're not playing. It's not like, hey, you earned this spot by working hard in practice and you know, being a leader or whatever, staying true to the program or doing whatever, you dotting your I's and crossing your T's. Nope, you earned this spot because you're the most lethal guy that we have to put in that spot. And I think that's why you saw the starting defensive front that you saw against Arkansas State. I don't expect that to change on Saturday against SMU. It's a defensive front that I believe can get after it. They can stunt. They can bring in linebackers. The cheetah position, we'll talk about that here in a little bit when we talk about our players to watch. I think the cheetah position comes in pretty crucial this week as well. So there you have it. That's four things I'm going to watch for on Saturday. Really curious what you're going to be looking for. Hit us up on Twitter at Sports Heartland on Twitter. You can go online, heartland-sports.com, find our website, find the podcast page, drop a comment there. What are you looking for from this Oklahoma football team, offensively, defensively, special teams-wise? What are you looking for against the Mustangs on Saturday evening? Let's talk next about the key players for this game on both sides of the ball, and then we'll wrap up with a score prediction. So let's do a quick recruiting update because Nigel Smith, four-star defensive end out of Melissa, Texas, is going to be making his announcement here pretty quick. He's got four crystal ball predictions from 24/7 Sports. All those predictions are towards Oklahoma. Probably by the time you download and listen to this podcast pregame, Smith would have already made his decision because I think that's coming in less than 2 hours at the time I'm recording this. So odds are, unless you're one of the very first people to listen to the podcast, it's going to have happened. Smith is a four-star defensive line prospect, number 12 composite for 24/7 Sports, number 12 defensive lineman in the nation, number 16 overall prospect from the state of Texas. It does look like he's a heavy lean towards Oklahoma, but Ohio State, Penn State, Texas A&M, and Rutgers, ironically, are all involved there. And the reason why I mentioned Texas A&M is because anytime that the Aggies are involved, that means there's a big bag of cash involved. And so it's just going to be a matter of what's his price. Is it just all about money moving from the prep level to the collegiate level? Is it about player development? Is it about education? Is it about program? What is it about? And because if it's about the bag, Texas A&M has an advantage there. But it looks like Oklahoma, Todd Bates, Miguel Chavis have done a pretty good job at recruiting him. Another guy to keep an eye on, he is from Oklahoma, from the Tulsa area, the homeschool guy from NOAA, Danny Okoye. He's a composite four-star guy. Again, looking at composite, the number one guy from the state of Oklahoma, number 10 player nationally. he's got 30 offers that he's sitting on right now as well. And Oklahoma seems to be in there as a favorite for him as well. So Oklahoma can do a lot for their 2023 class by getting a couple of commitments, hopefully starting very, very soon. I said 2023, 2024. Hopefully getting a commitment here pretty quick from Nigel Smith. The Sooners with 22 commitments right now for the class of 2024. It's a class ranking of number 12 currently. I believe that's the highest ranked class in the Big 12, number 12 nationally by 24/7 Sports. They had like 20-plus recruits last weekend for the Arkansas State game. A lot of positive things were said by the recruits following that game. But here we go. Let's talk about the game itself, moving in Oklahoma SMU again. Some players that we want to keep an eye on. We'll start with the quarterbacks because I think Dylan Gabriel's performance last week, 308 yards, 2 touchdowns, also had the rushing touchdown, pretty solid. He wasn't needed very much in the running game. He flashed that he could do it with that second quarter rushing touchdown. But, you know, a big deal for Dylan Gabriel to go out and lead the way he did because of what's behind him now. Last year, there was nothing behind him, but now you got five-star recruit Jackson Arnold, who looked pretty good as well against what was a beaten-up and depleted SMU defense by the time Arnold came in the game. Not trying to take away from Jackson Arnold's performance, just trying to be realistic about his performance. Dylan Gabriel has to be efficient. He's going to have to make the good reads, and then he's going to have to hit some tight windows. That's why I talked earlier about Andrell Anthony and taking advantage of whatever SMU does. To jump back to that conversation, this is where, I mean, it doesn't matter if Andrell Anthony is 45 yards down the field, open by 10 yards. If Dylan Gabriel can't make the throw, then it doesn't matter what Andrell Anthony does. It doesn't matter if SMU rolls over the top with the safety of Andrell Anthony, and then you have Jahlil Farouk, or you've got you've got Austin Stogner, or you got whoever else running underneath. I think if Dylan Gabriel can't make that throw, what's going to happen this week? Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to make a bold prediction here. That's really not that bold. Every overthrow, every underthrow, every missed read, you're going to have people start talking about, hey, maybe Jackson Arnold should get in the game. Maybe Jackson Arnold should get in the game. And Dylan Gabriel is either going to either squelch that out or he's going to feed that fire. And don't think we won't do it. Don't think as Oklahoma fans we won't go there because we already saw it. I mean, the coaches have changed. The quarterbacks have left. But we, the fans, are still the same fans that were clamoring for Caleb Williams over Spencer Rattler. And you're talking about 2 5-star guys. Dylan Gabriel's not a 5-star guy. The guy behind him is a 5-star guy. So if we'll ask for and complain about and beg for and chant for even to have a 5-star replace a 5-star, then what won't we do to have a 5-star replace Dylan Gabriel? I think Dylan Gabriel's the guy. He's the best guy to run this offense because of his experience at the collegiate level, because of his experience with Jeff Lebby. Now he's got to go out and prove guys like me right and prove the other part of the fan base that wants to see Jackson Arnold thrown into the fire, prove them wrong. So Dylan Gabriel's got a lot of responsibility against this SMU defense. But then on the other side of the ball, you've got on the other side of the field, you've got Preston Stone, 248 yards last week against 3 touchdowns against that Louisiana Tech defense. Again, Oklahoma's going to bring probably a better pass rush. The Sooners look faster and longer, if you will, in that defensive secondary. So Preston Stone, he's a quarterback. He's a quarterback who can he can make you pay if you give him time. And there's not a defensive secondary in the nation at any level that can give you 100% blanket coverage for beyond 8 to 9 seconds. And so you got to take away Preston Stone's time in the pocket because he'll carve you up. If you leave him back there, he'll carve you up. So it goes back to what we said earlier about the defensive line and getting pressure back there. This is obviously the best quarterback Oklahoma has seen this season, but I think he's probably going to be the best quarterback Oklahoma sees over the next several games, in a few games at least, until they get into conference play. So this is a good outlier, a good competition. And I tell you what, he's got, let's talk about another player to watch, because he's got a guy in LJ Johnson who Sorry, that's the running back. He's got a guy in Jordan Hudson who caught two passes for 72 yards last week, all right? So we talked about Andrew Anthony being able to get deep behind a secondary and have that blazing speed. Well, guess what? Hudson's that same guy for SMU. Compare him. Let's compare him to Nick Anderson for just a second, because Nick Anderson came in later on in the game, made two catches, 68 yards. And what have we been talking about this whole week? Post the Oklahoma-Arkansas State game, we talked about how impressive Nick Anderson was, even though he only had two catches. How we talked about the potential, we talked about the upside, we talked about the playmaking ability, we talked about how he can fit and work more into this offensive rotation. We talked about this guy extensively based off of two catches for 68 yards. Well, SMU has the exact same dude in Hudson, who had two catches for 72 yards, and one of them was a score. By the way, Nick Anderson's Oklahoma's leading receiver in yardage, which blew out one of my predictions because he beat Angel Anthony by 2 yards. The point is, there is a speed burner guy in SMU's offense, and that's going to put some pressure on Oklahoma's defense, much the same way that Anthony is going to put on the SMU defense. So now let's go to the running backs. Let's talk about Javonte Barnes for Oklahoma for just a minute, because we've already mentioned him in the podcast. But I think this is the time where we see Javonte Barnes take over as that number one option in Oklahoma's offense. But here's the thing. 13 carries, 3.8 yards per carry is what he averaged. He didn't score. All the scores belong to other running backs, but his career, as short as it is, 2022 season, he had 116 carries, averaging 4.5 yards per carry in 2022. I'm pointing that out because I think his yards per carry average has to go up. It has to go up from 3.8 last week. If he's going to be that guy, if he's going to move in to that number one spot, I think he's got to bump up to at least, you know, somewhere around 4.3 or higher, because that's where you want to be. You want to be that, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust is the old offensive saying. But really what you want is a 4 yard per carry guy at this level with this type of offense. Barnes is almost there. Again, I think of the guys that played last week, he's the guy that has the biggest upside. I think once you throw Salchuk in the mix, he's your playmaker. Salchuk's that guy that can really beat you with different facets of his game. He's fast through the gap. He's got that breakaway speed, but also he can hit you on a 5 yard flat route that he can turn into an 80 yard down the field type situation because of the speed. So I think Javonte Barnes is the guy that Oklahoma needs to kind of ride, hitch their wagon to, if I can use a Toby Rowland type analogy there, and let him just kind of power that offense. On the other side of the field, though, you've got LJ Johnson, who is the workhorse for SMU. 14 carries last week, 128 yards. He had a rushing touchdown. LJ Johnson he's going to be the guy. He's only a sophomore, 5'10", 211 pounds. And he's a guy, you know, average. We talked about that average yards per carry. Well, if you quick math here, 128 yards off of 14 carries, that's a little bit over 9 yards per carry. Now his longest run of the game against Louisiana Tech was 67 yards. That helps bump up that average a little bit. But Oklahoma's defense, what you see is this week, they're going to be tested because of balance. They're going to be tested because of playmakers on all three phases. You got a playmaker at quarterback. You got a playmaker at receiver. You got a playmaker at running back. Now, Oklahoma's got to counter that with some defensive guys. They got to counter that by matching playmaker for playmaker. And the guy I didn't mention when we're talking about Oklahoma's offense, I'm going to bring him back around because I kind of hinted at him earlier, but Jahlil Farouk is the guy. If you had me placing wagers on which Oklahoma receiver would not catch a pass in the season opener against Arkansas State, Jahlil Farouk would not have been my guy. I would have never thought about him not catching a pass because he's supposed to be the guy that kind of steps in and takes over on this offense as far as volume catches. Well, he's behind the chains, so to speak, on that now. Jahlil Farouk, this is his game, I believe, because of everything I already said about Andrew Anthony. Don't want to beat that dead horse. But I think the guy that steps up into that role is going to be the two best candidates, in my opinion, Jahlil Farouk, Austin Stogner. And I think Jahlil Farouk has a little bit of a flip side advantage on that because if he's already, the chemistry he's already established, that's maybe that safety blanket type mentality with Dylan Gabriel. When you flip over to the defensive side of the ball, I think there's two guys really for Oklahoma, two guys for SMU. They're going to be some of the difference makers. And I'm going to mess up this name, okay? For SMU, it's our safety, Isaiah Nwokoba. Six tackles to lead the team last week, but there's something interesting to note about here. Six tackles from the safety position, which lets me know guys are either running pass-heavy offenses from Louisiana Tech last week, or running backs are getting to the second level of the defense. So whenever you see a defensive back, a safety particularly, as your leading tackler, you got to figure out which one of the two is it. Is it a pass-heavy offense, or is it guys getting to the second level, beyond the second level of the defense? And when you look at the stats from that Louisiana Tech-SMU game, the reality is that Louisiana Tech ran the ball 24 times and they only averaged 1.2 yards per carry. So you know it wasn't guys getting to the second level of the defense. So what it means is, to me, that this guy, the safety, I did his name once. I'm not going to try it again. But he's a ball hawk. He's around 33 passing attempts last week for Louisiana Tech. He's going to be the guy who's going to be around the ball. And so you got to. To me, I think that's the guy they're going to put over top of Andrell Anthony. So that's who I'm looking at there on the defensive side of the ball, first and foremost for him. And then the second guy you got to look at, I think, for Oklahoma is a linebacker, Alexander Kilgore, who he only had three tackles last week, but he had two sacks. And so he's a guy they're going to bring pressure with, in my opinion, based off of what you saw on film last week. Alexander Kilgore is going to be that guy who tries to come in and make those plays on Dylan Gabriel on the obvious passing downs, or maybe even when they're trying to guess if it's a pass play or not. So those are the two defensive guys for SMU. I think when you flip over to Oklahoma's side of the field, the two guys to me are pretty obvious. Number one is Danny Stutzman. Danny Stutzman is the quarterback of this defense. I thought he did a better than decent job last week at getting the defense lined up, putting them in position to try to make the plays, looking over, getting the calls from the sideline, adjusting to those calls, and then just being an overall team leader. He ended up with four tackles last week. And so this is going to be a bigger challenge because of what we talked about with the balance that SMU brings. It brings more challenge to a guy like Danny Stutzman, who's coordinating the defensive attack against the offense. So you got to watch him from two perspectives. You got to watch him from the production perspective and how many tackles does he bring to this defense, but also you got to watch it from the leadership perspective, as does he get the guys in the right place? Does he make the calls that are the right calls? Does he see the right call from the sideline coming in and so forth? So Stutzman is one guy. I think the other guy you got to watch for on Oklahoma's defense is number four, Justin Harrington. And here's the reason why. I think the cheetah position, obviously, I mean, this is Captain Obvious. I mean, this is a better offense, a stronger test for this defense. That means the cheetah position becomes that much more important for having success, because this is the game where Justin Harrington is going to have to make the decision on pass protection and run protection. You know, he's going to have to, if there's quarterback fakes, if there's play action, those type of things, Justin Harrington is going to be the key to this defense thriving or not. And the reason why I'm only mentioning Justin Harrington, because raise your hand if you know what Desaun McCullough is going to do. He was in a boot for most of the week at practice. They talked about an ankle sprain. It wasn't a high ankle sprain, but do they try to give Desaun McCullough a go at it? If they do give him a go at it, is he 100% healthy? Those are things we don't know, which turned around just to put more pressure on Justin Harrington. He may get more time in that position than what he had in week one against Arkansas State, just because you don't know what's there with Desaun McCullough. So those are the guys, offense and defense, both sides of the ball, I think you should keep an eye on as this game progresses through the first through fourth quarters. As far as score predictions go, let me go back and remind you, Oklahoma's a 14.5, 15.5 point favorite. It has shifted one. I think initially when I started mapping this out there at 15.5 earlier in the week, now they're 14.5 as we're less than 24 hours before kickoff. 68.5 point on the over-under. Guys, I don't know that I can... At this point, I don't know that I can pick Oklahoma to cover a spread that's greater than two touchdowns. In fact, I would predict this game to be out, and this is just a trust issue, okay? So this isn't me being a hater. This is definitely not me being a homer. It's me needing to see something from this defense that I didn't see last year, and Arkansas State doesn't count because they were that bad, right? I need to see defensive pressure. I need to see coverage downfield. I need to see running lanes and gaps shut up. That's what I need to see. And yes, we got that last week. But again, I'm looking at the quality opponent from week one to week two. Now, Tanner Mordecai is not running this offense at SMU, but they still have the ability to be pretty potent, I guess is the word I'm looking at, with Preston Stone. I'm picking this as a closer game. I've got Oklahoma winning. But I think the money line is, if I was playing this game, the money line is the only thing I'd feel comfortable with. I don't feel comfortable with over at 68.5. And I certainly don't feel comfortable with Oklahoma at minus 14.5 as a favorite in this game. So give me a final score somewhere around the neighborhood of, 31 to 26 or something like that. Let's go officially. Here's my official score prediction. Let's go 34-28 Oklahoma to win this game. Maybe a more comfortable 34-28 game than what it sounds like on paper. Maybe SMU with a late garbage time touchdown or something like that. But as soon as win, that's the most important part. So let's wrap that up, and then we'll be back next week to talk about some post-game thoughts. Again, you can always find us online, heartland-sports.com. You can find us on Twitter, at Sports Heartland. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your football. Bye. See you later, everybody. I'm gonna be the man who's watching.